This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
What's great to have as our guest today, Mr. Burton S. Blumert. Bert has been a coin and precious metal dealer for more than 50 years. He's chairman of the Ludwig von Mises Institute. He's publisher of LouRockwell.com. If I have questions about money, gold, the dollar, and similar things, this is the man I want to hear from. So, Bert, welcome. And so here we are in this crisis. Why, while everything else is going to heck in a handbasket, is the dollar so strong?
You mean against other currencies and commodities and equities?
Yes, against everything else, seemingly.
Please understand, I'm as in the dark on many of these issues as anybody else. These are unprecedented times, but I've done a little research and talked around to some of our experts in my particular field, the metals field. But the best I can see is that the dollar is still a reserve currency. All paper is pretty much the same. So there has been a flight to safety to the dollar. And, of course, ultimately, there is no safety. When price inflation becomes evident, as it surely will with all this infusion of money, gasoline, I predict, safely will be back to $4 and $5 and maybe $10. But what choice does the consumer have? Let's take a sophisticated consumer, someone who's listened to some of the things that Ron Paul has had to say. And if they want to buy gold and protect themselves, they've been unable to do so, or silver, over the past recent weeks. So I don't know how that correlates to the dollar being strong against the European currencies. But certainly this is just as bad for all the currencies. There's no such thing as a strong currency. We used to think the Swiss franc was a hard currency. That doesn't appear to be the case anymore.
It seems like the Swiss Central Bank, in fact, is like a subsidiary of the Fed. I mean, in the same sense, the Bank of England and the other colonial central banks of the U.S. Empire.
There's no question that in my almost half century of experience in this area, that the Swiss institutions, all of them, have diminished their shell of what they used to be in respect for privacy, and they've knuckled under to pressures from various other agencies, mostly the U.S. Central Bank, I'm sure, as you're suggesting.
Bert, when people want to buy gold, it's been very difficult in these weeks. And, you know, for example, American Eagles, gold or silver versions, have been almost unavailable. What's going on?
In the old days, we would start our day by calling the three or four major wholesalers to find out two things. One, what are the premiums? How much is each coin relative to the spot level, on a wholesale level? And availability. Can I get immediate coins on Tuesday? Oh, I may have to wait for Thursday for those Krugerrands. But this was the routine call. Today and the last 6 or 7 weeks, you made one call a day. Is there any merchandise available that you can buy, physical merchandise? And in the recent, I'd say the last 2.5 weeks, the answer has been no. And this is true as far as I understand worldwide. And I would be, as a matter of caution, I would be very wary of anybody that advertises anywhere in the financial press or on TV that they have physical material to sell, because I don't think that that's the case.
Well, Bert, why is this? Why is the U.S. Mint not selling American Gold Eagles anymore?
First, the U.S. Mint. People misunderstand the capability of the U.S. Mint. Let's go back to normal times for a moment. Most of the material that is bought and sold is from the secondary market. Krugerrands, all of the Krugerrands are from the secondary market. I would say in the course of an average year, 75 to 80% of the transactions that I made were from merchandise purchased from other customers, other dealers. In the past, when merchandise became hard to find, we always had the U.S. and Canadian Royal Mint available, because they were producing enough to satisfy. And we didn't like to do that because it meant you were paying a full premium. You never got any advantage when buying coin, almost never got an advantage from buying coins from the Mint. So there are distributors who have contracts with the U.S. Mint, and you'd call one of those, and they are the major wholesalers. You'd say, Well, what's the bet? What have you got today? Well, all I've got today are 2006 American Eagles, and they were just minted Thursday, and I could sell them. So you bought them reluctantly, but at least it was a source of merchandise. Now, one would suppose that they would be striking full if their capability, the U.S. Mint, is to strike, for example, 300,000 ounces a day or something like that, just guessing. They don't care. They don't care. They believe their function is to follow their congressional edicts, which tell them that they're supposed to survey. You're not talking to business people. They have no interest in this. I learned unanimously from anybody who deals with them. You'd think they would take a pride that they can. It was once alleged that the Mint was the only U.S. agency that was operated in the black. The second thing that most people don't know is that the Mint does not strike. It does not create coins. What they do is they strike against the planchet. The planchet is the disc that the coin is struck upon, and that's what the Mint does. And I believe they're obliged to use newly purchased gold, which they buy at market price from, I guess you'd call them, resources. These would be, now, most of these people were out of business because of the 20-year depression that the industry had. So there are no really active, efficient producers of these planchets. So that's a stranglehold, sort of similar to what they contended with oil, that there were no refineries. The oil may have been there, but there were no refineries to convert it to gasoline, which is what the public needed. Sort of. Now, that's one theory, and I go along a little bit with that. One that I sort of don't go along, although it came from a very experienced fellow I respect, his contention was that the Mint doesn't want to be losing money in that they're buying the gold at prevailing rate, spot, or whatever basis they use when they buy gold to strike these eagles, and then they charge 3.3% to the wholesalers. I'm sorry if this is getting long, but I think it'll explain to some people what's going on. That they don't want to be losing money. They see them the price is going down, and that why should they buy gold at 750 when they know it's going to be 730? And they're going to lose money. That would be almost a plausible reaction from a businessman, but that's what I was led to believe. So those are the theories that they're just not getting sufficient material from the refiners, if you will, to create the planchets, and that's why they're back ordered.
So they're not willing to melt any of those wooden bars at Fort Knox?
Well, it's supposed to. I believe the law, which took place in 1986, requires that they purchase new gold.
Well, very interesting. I'll be talking to Ron Paul in a podcast tomorrow, and he was in some senses the father of at least parts of that law.
Never credited positively, of course.
No, never credited.
We used to have European gold coins as a significant addition to our product supply. So in the early years, in my career, from 1962 through 1974, pretty much that's all we had to sell legally. The British gold sovereign, the French and the Swiss and the Dutch, these were a remarkable value for the customers. They were in good condition. These were all original money, mostly from the latter part of the 19th and early 20th century. And we sold sovereigns by the thousands. They were about a quarter of an ounce, and some people preferred them to bullion coins, which are really not coins in that they have no history as money. So the people really liked those that material, and all of a sudden that stopped. So I inquired around why were some of these coins not available, and I was told, and it sounded reasonable, that the coins were handled by banks, but that they were owned by private individuals whose grandfathers and great-grandfathers kept this as wealth to protect their wealth, and their heirs had no regard for that view of the world, and they were selling this stuff off. Now, these ignorant old grandfathers and great grandfathers appear to have some wisdom, and now these people that had been selling, not only did they stop selling, they became buyers. that's doomed to a market when a seller becomes a buyer. And that's another reason that there's no supply. So I would contend it's a two-tier market. Now, I was corrected. Namely, gold is 728, but you can't buy a Krugerrand. And you say, well, what is the value of a Krugerrand? Ultimately, you can find out. You can say to, you know, you can establish, I'll pay $100 over spot. I would guess that the real market, real in the sense in coins, is from 7 to 10% over these prices that we see see on the futures market. If someone had 1,000 Krugerrands, that'd be, you know, that's a significant holding. But if someone had 1,000, I would guess that they could command an even higher premium for that many coins to any of these wholesalers, which indicates that they're probably short the metal. Some of them are, which is interesting. What they do is if someone buys 100 Krugerrands in the past, normal times, someone buys 100 Krugerrands, they cover that 100 in the futures market. So they buy a contract, so they're hedged. But they weren't hedged. They thought they were hedged. If the gold started to fall, they would get margin calls from the futures exchange. But there were, on the other hand, they have Krugerrands which are increasing in premium. So it was a horrible situation for the, and many of them, I suspect, were badly damaged by this situation. And they're very worried. I'm talking about major, major companies, at least in our world. They talk $750 billion. That, to me, has no meaning. But a big dealer who handles $12 to $15 billion a year of business, I'm still impressed by that. These fellows, how would you like to have a staff of 20 people and they have no, you can't accommodate your customers? They're going crazy. And I've talked to salesmen that I've known for 30 years. So it's an interesting, I suspect, like everything else, it will change, of course. But it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Bert, you mentioned one of Blumert's rules for buying gold, that is, take physical delivery. Don't let anybody store your gold. How about what are the other rules?
Well, some of them are, I would be more inclined to modify. For example, we were very selective in requiring liquidity, total liquidity, to the product that you buy. I would be a little less selective today. For example, the last group, we had some kilo bars, which we were very happy to get. A kilo is 1,000 grams, 32.15 ounces, and at $750 gold is $28,000 or $29,000. Now, we've handled them for years, but ordinarily, it would be fourth or fifth choice. So, now, when we had these kilo bars and they were hallmarked, that means they were stamped by reputable companies, we were very happy to get them. So I have become more flexible in what someone says, Bert, someone offered me some Swiss 20-franc gold coins, and yes, buy them if the price is right. So we've become a little more, but I don't think any of the rules change. Now, I spent my career preparing people, if you will, selling what we believe in, and creating, trying people to survive this. But we now it's here. We don't know. I wasn't prepared. Murray never prepared me for this. I'm referring to Murray. Well, Murray used to encourage me when the markets were dismal, and he would put it in perspective and why he thought it. Although he was no market predictor, but he always brought level thinking to the subject. But No, you make sure you keep it private and don't commingle it with anybody else and don't trade it. Which is interesting, there are no gold coin sellers. Obviously, they're driving the price down. Somebody is driving the price down in the futures markets with paper, selling paper gold. But no, to my knowledge, talking to dealers, there are no sellers of real coins, which is amazing that they... And there's all this buying pent up, so it's a very unusual situation. But certainly, there is no substitute to physically having even a receipt from me. There's no such thing as paper gold. It just can't, because the most legitimate institutions could be threatened. And there's, as we know.
So, Bert, here's the poor investor. His 401k is evaporating before his eyes. What would be your advice to him?
Well, it's very sad, and that's the worst part of it, that many of our clients are not just the hardcore of our clients hold mostly cash and gold. Others took the sensible approach of having diversity. We were always told diversity. To me, diversity meant having 6 Krugerrands and 6 Maple Leafs and 6 American Eagles and 6 Swiss. They had something other in mind when they said diversity. In advising people, I think you just try to be philosophic if you can. There's always people worse off. And here's something, but take cities like Beirut and Baghdad. These are large, modern cities. Here were people continuing to this very day, afraid to go to work for fear that someone's going to kill them. Bullets and bombs are all around them. Try to put yourself in that position of a citizen. Maybe our problems are relatively minor as compared. I don't know if that's a way to think, but we still, I believe 1938 was the worst unemployment figures, and I think it was 20% unemployed. As Murray used to say, well, but at least 80% were working. I don't know, it could be worse this time, I don't know. Nobody knows, I think, but certainly we have a good life, and that we have to, so that's the start. And then try to slowly merchant gold. I mean, there's no question that gold will still have a very significant need because they're not solving any problems. We know that. So I would do gold will be, products will be available, and silver products. And of course, I've talked mostly about gold, but it's pretty much true for silver as well. Try to accumulate what you can. Try to make it your savings. That's always what we were selling. We were selling insurance and savings. And with that state of mind, you have to rebuild your savings. And next time, you'll be better educated. You'll be better informed if we live long enough to see you next time.
Bert, the horrible Keynesian Bill Gross of the PIMCO bond funds,
yes,
who's so well connected to the Fed and the Treasury, was on one of the financial channels the other night, and he was talking about what the economy looked like. He said there was one very bad sign. People are saving again. So some of us take a different view than the Keynesians on this question.
Yes, of course. And the people falling, you know, these talking heads that are falling all over each other, guessing bottoms, and they're just absurd. Last night, sadly, I'm witness to most of this, 24 hours a day on high-definition television, watching the world, the equity markets collapse. And I noted last night for the first time that there weren't as many advertisers on. There were a lot of public service announcements on. Very interesting that it seemed maybe they're losing some of the advertisers. No surprise. Who would be stupid enough to be trying to sell equities right at this point in time? But I was very comfortable with these harmless commercials. Maybe that's just another sign.
Bert Blumer, thank you so much for being with us today.
It is my pleasure, and I hope that the next time you interview me that we'll be able to buy gold coins.
I want to make sure that everybody knows that Bert has a new book out. It's called Bagels, Barry Bonds, and Rotten Politicians. It's a very funny book. It's a very wise book. Look at his archive on LouRockwell.com, and you'll see it there. Or, in fact, look at the LouRockwell.com gold page, which has a cover of Bert's book on it, and you can click on that and buy his book. It's a great book to read in these times.
Thank you very much, Lovett.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show, produced by LouRockwell.com. The best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@lourockwell.com. And thanks for listening.